searched the ground looking for a weapon, a heavy branch or large shed antler, or a good stone, something to defend himself. But when the huge animal finally broke cover, all he could do was throw up his arm in front of his face as he was knocked over by the charge. But the animal wasn't biting him, he was licking him. Then he saw the ear cocked at a jaunty angle. It was not a wild wolf, he realized. Wolf, is that you? What are you doing here? He sat up and had to fend off the exuberant advances of the excited animal. He sat for a while, petting the wolf and scratching him behind his ears, trying to calm him down. Why aren't you with John Ayla or Ayla? Why did you follow me all this way? Jandalar said, beginning to have the inkling of alarm. When he stood up and started on his way again, Wolf pranced nervously in front of him, then back in the direction he had come. Do you want to go back, Wolf? Well, go ahead. You can go back. But when Jandalar started out again, the wolf jumped in front of him again. What is it, Wolf? Jandalar looked up at the sky and for the first time noticed that the sun was well past its high point. Do you want me to go back with you? Yes, that's what he wants, Jandalar, Danug said. Danug, what are you doing here? Jandalar said. Looking for you. Looking for me? Why? It's Ayla, Jandalar. You have to come back right away. Ayla? What's wrong, Danug? Remember that root, the one she made into juice for her and Mammut? She did it again to show Zelandani, but this time she drank it herself. No one can wake her up, not even John Ayla. The Danyer says you have to come right away, or Ayla will die and her spirit will be lost forever, Danug said. Jandalar turned white. No, not that root. Oh, great mother, don't let her die. Please don't let her die, he said, and started running back the way he had come. If he had been preoccupied on his way out, it was nothing compared to his single-minded intensity as he raced back. He tore along the edge of the river, scrambling through brush that tore at his bare legs and arms and face. He didn't feel them. He ran until he was gasping for breath that rasped his throat raw, until he felt a pain in his side that was like a hot knife, until his legs knotted and ached. He hardly felt any of it. The pain in his mind was more. He even outdistanced Danug. Only the wolf kept pace. He couldn't believe how far he had come, and worse, how long it was taking him to get back. He slowed once or twice to catch his breath, but never stopped, and put on an extra burst of speed when the brush thinned out as he neared the campsite.
Where is she?
He asked the first person he saw. The Zelandania Lodge, came the answer. The whole summer meeting had been looking for him, waiting for him, and as he raced toward the lodge, several people actually cheered. He didn't hear it. And he didn't stop until he crashed through the entrance drape and saw her lying on the bed surrounded by lamps. And then all he could do was gasp out her name.
Ayla!
Chapter 41 Jandalar could hardly breathe, and every time he gasped for air his throat felt raw. Sweat was pouring off him. He was bent over double from the pain in his side. His legs shook and could hardly support him as he approached the bed at the back of the lodge. Wolf had pressed in beside him and, with lolling tongue, was panting heavily too.
"Here, Jandalar, sit,"
Zelandani said, standing up and giving him her own stool. She could see his extreme stress and knew he must have run a great distance.
"Get him some water," she said to the nearest acolyte. "Some for the wolf, too."
As he neared, he could see that Ayla's skin had a deathly gray pallor.
Ayla, oh Ayla, why did you do it again?
He rasped, barely able to speak.
You know you almost died last time.
He drank from the cup that was handed to him as a reflex, hardly realizing someone had given it to him. Then he literally climbed onto the bed. He pushed back the covers, picked Ayla up, and held her in his arms, shocked at how chilled she was.
"She's so cold," he said with a sobbing hiccup.
He didn't know tears were streaming down his face. He wouldn't have cared if he did. The wolf looked at the two people on the bed, lifted his muzzle into the air and howled, a long, eerie wolf song that sent chills down the backs of the Zelandania who were in the lodge and the people who were outside. It stunned the ones who were chanting, causing them to miss a pulse and stop the continuous fugue for a heartbeat. It was only then that Jondalar became conscious of the Zelandania chanting. Then Wolf put his front paws on the bed and whined for her attention.
"Ayla, Ayla, please come back to me," Jondalar pleaded. "You can't die. Who will give me a son?" "Oh, Ayla, what a thing to say. I don't care if you give me a son. It's you I want. I love you. I don't even care if you never talk to me again, just so I can look at you sometime. Please come back to me. Oh, great mother, send her back. Please send her back. I'll do anything you want. Just don't take her away from me."
Zelandani watched the tall, handsome man, face, chest, arms, and legs, scratched and in places bleeding, sitting on the bed, holding the nearly lifeless woman in his arms like a baby, rocking back and forth, tears streaming down his face, crying for her to come back. She hadn't seen him cry since he was a small boy. Jondalar didn't cry. He fought to control his emotions, keep them to himself. Very few people had ever gotten really close to him, except his family and herself, and even then, once he reached manhood, there was always some distance, some reserve. After he returned from his stay with Dalinar, she had often wondered if he would ever really love a woman again, and blamed herself. She knew he still loved her then, and she had been tempted, more than once, to give up the Zelandania and mate with him. But as time went along and she never became pregnant, she knew she had made the right choice. She felt sure he would mate someday, and though she had often doubted that he would be capable of giving himself completely to any woman, Jondalar needed children. Children could be loved freely, completely, without reservation, and he needed to love like that. She had been genuinely happy for him when he returned from his journey with a woman that he obviously loved, a woman who was worthy of his love. But she hadn't realized until then just how much he did love her. The first felt a small twinge of guilt. Maybe she shouldn't have pushed Ayla so hard to become Zelandani. Maybe she should have just left the two of them alone. But it was the mother's choice, after all.
"She's so cold. Why is she so cold?"
Jondalar said. He stretched her out on the bed, laid down next to her, then half-covered her naked body with his own and pulled the furs over both of them. The wolf jumped up on the bed with them, crowding in close to her other side. Jondalar's heat filled the space quickly, and the wolf's helped to hold it in. The man held her for a long time, looking at her, kissing her pale, still face, talking to her, pleading with her, begging the mother for her, until finally his voice, his tears, and heat of his body and the wolf's began to penetrate her coldest depths. Ayla wept silently. "You did it! You did it!" the people chanted, accusing her. Then only Jondalar stood there. She heard a wolf howl nearby.
"I'm sorry, Jondalar," she cried. "I'm sorry I hurt you."
He held out his arms to her.
"Ayla," he gasped, "give me a son. I love you."
She started towards the figure of Jondalar standing beside Wolf and walked between them. Then she felt something pulling. Suddenly she was moving, faster, much faster than before, though she felt rooted in place. The mysterious alien clouds appeared and were gone in an instant, yet seemed to take forever. The deep black void swooped by, engulfing her in an unearthly black emptiness that went on endlessly. She fell through the mist, and for a moment saw herself and Jandalar in a bed, surrounded by lamps. Then she was inside a frigid, clammy shell. She struggled to move, but she was so stiff, so cold. Finally, her eyelids flickered. She opened her eyes and looked into the tear-stained face of the man she loved, and a moment later felt the warm, licking tongue of the wolf.
Ayla, Ayla, you're back. Zelindani, she's awake. Oh, Donnie, great mother, thank you. Thank you for giving her back to me,
Jandalar said with a heaving sob. He was holding her in his arms, crying his relief and his love, afraid to hold her too tight for fear he would hurt her, but not ever wanting to let her go. And she didn't want him to. Finally, he relaxed his embrace to let the Danyar look at her.
Get down now, wolf,
Jandalar said, pushing the animal towards the edge.
You helped her. Now let Zelindani see her.
The wolf jumped off the bed, but sat on the floor looking at them. The first among those who served bent over Ayla and saw open, gray-blue eyes and a wan smile. She shook her head in amazement.
I didn't believe it was possible. I was sure she was gone, lost forever in some dark, irretrievable place where even I could not go to find her to lead her to the mother. I was afraid the chanting was useless, that nothing could be done to save her. I doubted that anything would ever bring her back, not my most ardent hopes, nor the transcendent wish of every Zelindani, not even your love, Jandalar. All the Zelindania combined could not have done what you did. I'm almost willing to believe you could have raised her from the Dani's deepest underworld. I've always said the Great Earth Mother would never refuse you anything you asked her for. I think this proves it.
The news spread through the campsite like a wildfire. Jandalar had brought her back. Jandalar had done what the Zelindania could not do. There wasn't a woman at the summer meeting who didn't wish in her heart that she was loved as much, or a man who didn't wish he knew a woman that he could love so strongly. Stories were already beginning, stories that would be told around hearth fires and campfires for years, about Jandalar's love, so great, it brought his Ayla back from the dead. Jandalar thought about Zelindani's comment. He had heard that before, though he wasn't entirely sure what it meant, but it left him feeling uncomfortable to be told that he was so favored by the mother that no woman could refuse him, not even Donnie herself. So favored that if he ever asked the mother for anything, she would grant his request. He had also been warned to be careful of what he wished for, because he might get it, although he didn't really understand what that meant either. For the first few days, Ayla was utterly exhausted, barely able to move, and so weak, there were times when the Danyar wondered if she would ever fully recover. She slept a great deal, sometimes lying so still it was hard to tell if she was still breathing, but her sleep wasn't always restful. Occasionally she would lapse into waves of delirium, tossing and turning and speaking out loud, but every time Ayla opened her eyes, Jandalar was there. He hadn't left her side since she awoke, except to take care of essential needs. He slept on his sleeping furs that he spread out on the floor beside her bed. Zelindani wondered, when Ayla seemed to falter, if he wasn't the only thing that kept her in the world of the living. In fact, he was, along with her own inherent will to live, and her years of hunting and exercise that had given her a strong, healthy body that could recover from devastating experiences, even those that brought her close to death. Wolf stayed with her most of the time as well, and seemed to sense when she was ready to wake up. After Jandalar stopped him from jumping up and putting his dirty paws on the bed, Wolf discovered that the height of the bed was just right for him to stand up and lay his head on it to watch her just before she opened her eyes. Jandalar and Zelandani came to anticipate her waking by the actions of the animal. Janela was so happy to have her mother awake and Jandi and her mother back together that she often came into the Zelandania lodge to be with them. Though she didn't sleep there, if they were both awake, she sometimes stayed a while, sitting in Jandalar's lap or lying beside her mother or even taking a nap with her. Other times she would run in for only a moment, as if to convince herself that all was still well. After she was recovered enough, Ayla usually sent Wolf out with Janela, although at first he was torn between staying with the woman or going with the child. The Danyar hovered nearby as well. The first blamed herself for not paying closer attention to the young woman's condition from the time she first arrived. But summer meetings required so much of her time and attention that Ayla had always been hard for her to read. She seldom talked about herself or her problems and hid her feelings far too well. It was easy to overlook her symptoms of distress. Ayla looked up from the bed and smiled at the bushy, red-haired and bearded giant of a man who was looking down at her. Though not fully recovered, she had recently moved back to the camp of the Ninth Cave. She had been awake earlier when Jandalar told her Danuk wanted to visit, but she dozed off momentarily before she heard her name softly spoken. Jandalar was sitting beside her, holding her hand, and Janela was sitting in his lap. Wolf pounded his tail on the floor beside her bed in greeting to the young Mamutoi.
"I'm supposed to tell you, Janela, that Bokovan and some other children are going to Lavila's hearth to play and have something to eat. She has some bones for Wolf, too,"
Danug said.
"Why don't you go, Janela, and take Wolf?"
Ayla said, sitting up. "They would like to see you, and it won't be long before this summer meeting is over. After we go home, you probably won't see them again until next summer."
"All right, Mother. I'm getting hungry anyway, and maybe Wolf is, too."
The child gave her father and mother a hug, then walked toward the entrance with Wolf behind her. He whined back at Ayla before leaving the lodge, then followed after Janela.
"Sit down, Danuk,"
Ayla said, motioning toward a stool. Then she looked around.
"Where's Drues?"
Danuk sat down beside Ayla.
"Aldenor needed a male friend who is not related for something having to do with his upcoming matrimonial. Drues agreed to be the one, since I have to fill in as an adopted relative," Danuk said.
Jandalar nodded in understanding.
"It's difficult learning a complete new set of customs. I remember how it was when Thonolin decided to mate Jatamio. Because I was his brother, it made me kin to the Sharamudoi, too, and since I was his only relative, I had to be a part of the ceremonies."
Though he could speak of the brother he'd lost more easily now, Ayla noticed his expression of regret. It would always be a great sadness to him, she knew. Jandalar moved closer to Ayla and put his arm around her. Danuk smiled at both of them.
"First, there is something I need to say to you," he said with mock severity. "When are you two going to learn who you love? You both have to stop making problems for each other. Listen to me closely. Ayla loves Jandalar and no other man. Jandalar loves Ayla and no other woman. Do you think you can remember that? There never was and never will be anyone else for either one of you. I'm going to make a rule that you have to follow for the rest of your lives. I don't care if everyone else couples with anyone they want. You may only couple with each other. If I ever hear differently, I'm going to come back here and tie you both together. Is that understood?"
"Yes, Danuk,"
Jandalar and Ayla said in unison. She turned to smile at Jandalar, who was smiling back at her. Then both grinned at Danuk.
And I'll tell you a secret. As soon as we can, we're going to start a baby together,
Ayla said. Not yet, though, Jandalar said. Not until Zelandani says you are well enough. But, woman, just wait until you are.
I'm not sure which gift is better, Danuk said with a big smile. The gift of pleasure or the gift of knowledge. I think the mother must love us a lot to make starting a new life such a pleasure.
I think you're right, Jandalar said.
I have tried to translate the Zelandanyi mother's song into Mamutoi so I can tell everyone, and when I get back, I'm going to start looking for a mate so I can start a son, Danuk said.
What's wrong with a daughter?
Ayla said.
There's nothing wrong with a daughter, except I wouldn't be able to name her. I want a son so I can name him. I've never named a child before, Danuk said.
You've never had a child to name before, Ayla said, laughing.
Well, that's true, Danuk said, a bit chagrined. At least none I've known of. But you know what I mean. I've never had the chance before.
I understand how he feels. It doesn't matter to me whether we have another girl or a boy, but I wonder what it would be like to name a son, Jandalar said. But Danuk, what if the Mamutoi do not accept the idea that men should name the boys?
I just have to make sure that the woman I decide to mate agrees, Danuk said.
That's true, Ayla said. But why do you have to go back to find a mate, Danuk? Why don't you stay here, like Aldenor? I'm sure you could find a Zelandanyi woman who would be pleased to be your mate.
And Zelandanyi women are certainly beautiful, but in many ways I'm like Jandalar. Traveling can be exciting, but I need to return to my own people to settle down. Besides, there's only one woman I would stay here to mate, Ayla, Danuk said with a wink at Jandalar, and she's already claimed.
Jandalar chuckled, but there was a look in Danuk's eye, a tone in his voice, that made Ayla wonder if his jocular statement was said entirely in jest.
I'm just glad she was willing to come home with me, Jandalar said.
The way Jandalar looked at her, with his vivid blue eyes, made her tingle all the way to her innermost place.
Danuk is right. Dani must really love us to have made making children such a pleasure.
It isn't all pleasure for a woman, Jandalar. Giving birth can be very painful, Ayla said.
But I thought you said giving birth to John Ayla was easy, Ayla, Jandalar said, his forehead creased with his familiar frown.
Even an easy childbirth has some pain, Jandalar. It just wasn't as bad as I expected, Ayla said.
I don't want to cause you pain, he said, turning to look at her. Are you sure we should have another?
Jandalar suddenly remembered that Thanalan's mate had died giving birth.
Don't be silly, Jandalar. Of course we're going to have another baby. I want one too, you know. It's not just you, and it's not that bad. If you don't want to start one, though, maybe I can find another man who will, she said with a teasing smile.
Oh, no, you can't, Jandalar said, giving her shoulder a hug. Danuk just told you that you may not couple with anyone except me, remember?
I never wanted to couple with anyone but you, Jandalar. You are the one who taught me the mother's gift of pleasure. No one could possibly give me more. Maybe because I love you so much, Ayla said.
Jandalar turned his face away to hide the tears that had come to his eyes, but Danuk had looked in another direction and affected not to notice. When Jandalar turned back, he looked at Ayla with great seriousness.
I never told you how sorry I am about Morona. I didn't really want her that much. She just made it so easy. I didn't want to tell you because I was afraid it would hurt you. When you found us together, I kept thinking how much you must hate me. I want you to know, I love only you.
I know you love me, Jandalar,
Ayla said. Everyone at this whole summer meeting knows you love me. I wouldn't be here if you didn't love me. In spite of what Danuk said, if you ever need to, even if you just want to, you can couple with anyone you want, Jandalar. I don't even hate Morona anymore. I don't blame her for wanting you. Who wouldn't want you? Sharing the gift of pleasure isn't what makes love. It makes babies, but not love. Love can make pleasures better, but if you love someone, what difference does coupling with someone else once in a while make? Coupling takes a few moments. How can that be more important than a lifetime of love? Even in the clan, coupling was done just to relieve a man's needs. You wouldn't expect me to break our bond just because you coupled with someone else, would you?
Danug laughed. If that were a reason, everyone would have to break his bond. People look forward to festivals to honor the mother, to share pleasures with someone else once in a while. I've heard stories that Talut can still couple with as many as 6 women in a row at festivals. Mother always said it just gave her a chance to see if any other man could match him. None ever could.
Talut is a better man than I am, Jandalar said. There was a time, maybe, but I don't have the stamina anymore. And to be honest, I don't have the desire.
It may just be stories, Danuk said. I can't say that I've ever seen him with any woman except Mother. He spends a lot of time with other leaders, and she spends most of her time at meetings visiting with relatives and friends. I think most people just like to tell stories.
There was a pause in the conversation, and each of the young people looked at each other. Then Danug spoke up.
I wouldn't break the mating bond over it, but to be honest, I really would like it better if the woman I mate would share pleasures with no one except me.
What about during festivals to honor the Great Earth Mother?
Jandalar asked.
I know we should all honor the mother at festivals and such, but how would I know the children my mate brought to my hearth were mine if she shares pleasures with someone else?
Danuk said. Ayla looked at them both and remembered the words of the first. If a man loves the children a woman brings to his hearth now, why should knowing who started them make any difference?
Maybe it shouldn't, but I would still want them to be mine, Danuk said.
If you start a child, does that make him yours? Would you own him like a personal possession?
Ayla asked.
Would you not love a child you didn't own, Danuk?
I don't mean mine in the sense of owning, but mine in the sense that the child would have come from me, Danuk tried to explain. I probably would grow to care for any child of my hearth, one that didn't come from me, or even one that did not come from my mate. I loved Rydag as a brother, more than a brother, and he was not Talut's or Nezi's. But I would like to know if a child of my hearth was started by me. A woman doesn't have to worry. She always knows.
I understand how Danug feels, Ayla. It makes me happy to know John Ayla came from me, and everyone knows she did because everyone knows you never chose anyone but me. We always honored the mother at festivals, but we always chose each other.
I wonder if you'd be so eager to have children of your own if you had to go through the pain along with your mate,
Ayla said.
Some women would be happy if they never had to have children. Not many, but some.
The men glanced at each other, but neither one looked at Ayla, feeling slightly embarrassed at voicing personal thoughts that seemed to contradict the customs and beliefs of their people.
By the way, have you heard that Morona is going to mate again?
Danuk said, changing the subject.
She is,
Jandalar said.
No, I didn't know.
When?
in a few days at the late matrimonial, when Falara and Aldenor mate, Proliva said, just coming in. She was followed by Joharan.
That's what Aldenor told me, Danug said.
Greetings were exchanged, the women hugged, and the leader of the ninth cave bent down and touched her cheek with his. Low stools were dragged close to Ayla's bed.
Who is she mating?
Ayla asked after everyone was settled, picking up the thread of the recent disclosure. Some friend of Larimar who was staying with him and that bunch at the Falage, the one they aren't using anymore, Proliva said. He's a stranger, but Zelindanyi, I understand.
He comes from a group of caves that lives along Big River to the west of here. I heard he came to our summer meeting with a message for someone and decided to stay. I don't know if he knew them before, but he got along well with Larimar and the rest of that bunch,
Joharan said.
I think I know the one, Jondalar said.
He's been staying at the camp of the fifth cave since they left that Falage, and Morona has been staying there, too. That's where he met her, Proliva said.
I didn't think Morona wanted to mate again, and he seems rather young. I wonder why she would choose him,
Jondalar said. Maybe she didn't have much choice, Proliva said.
But everyone says she's so beautiful. She could have almost anyone she wanted,
Ayla said.
For a knight, but not for a mate, Danug said. I hear people talk. The men she's mated before don't speak very well of her.
And she's never had any children, Proliva said. Some people say she can't have any. That could make her less desirable to some men. But I guess it doesn't matter to her intended. She's going with him to his cave.
I think I met him,
Ayla said, when I was walking back from the Lanzadanyi camp with Echozar one night. I can't say that I cared much for him. Why did he move out of that Falage?
They all did after their personal things were taken,
Joharan said.
I heard something about that, but I wasn't paying much attention at the time,
Jondalar said.
Someone took things? Ayla said.
Someone took personal things from just about everyone who was staying at that Falage,
Joharan said.
Why would anyone do something like that?
Ayla asked.
I don't know, but Larimar was pretty upset when he found out that a new winter outfit he'd just traded for was missing, not to mention his pack carrier and most of his Barma. Someone else was missing new mittens. Another man lost a good knife, and almost all the food was gone,
Joharan said.
Does anyone know who did it?
Jondalar asked.
Two people are missing, Brukhaval and Madraman,
Joharan said.
Brukhaval left without anything, as far as anyone knows. The other men who were staying at the Falage claim most of his things were still there after he left. But later, most of them were missing, and so are Madraman's.
I heard Zelindani tell someone that Madraman did not return the sacred objects he received as an acolyte, Proliva said.
I saw Madraman leaving,
Ayla said, suddenly remembering.
When?
Joharan asked.
It was the day the ninth cave shared a feast with the Lanzadanyi. I was the only one at camp, and just coming out of the lodge, he gave me a look of such hatred. It actually frightened me, but he seemed to be in a big hurry. I remember thinking there was something odd about him. Then I realized I hardly ever saw him without his acolyte tunic, but this time he was wearing regular clothes, except I thought it was strange that his outfit was decorated with ninth cave symbols, not fifth cave.
That's where Larimar's new outfit went, Joharan said. I wondered if it was him.
Do you think Madraman took it?
Ayla said.
Yes, and everything else that was taken.
I think you're right, Joharan, Jondalar said. I would guess he didn't want to face people after the disgrace of being rejected by the Zelindania, at least not the people who knew him,
Danug said.
I wonder where he went, Proliva said.
He's probably going to try to find some other people to live with, Joharan said. That's why he took the things. He knows winter is coming, and he didn't know where he would be staying.
What will he do to get some strange group to accept him? He doesn't have a skill, and he never was much of a hunter. I heard he never went out hunting again after he joined the Zelandania, not even on a drive, Jandalar said.
Anyone can do that, and almost everyone does. Children love going out and beating the bushes and making a lot of noise to flush rabbits and other animals out, and then chasing them toward hunters or into a net, Proliva said.
Madraman does have a skill. That's why he didn't return the sacred objects he got from the Zelandania, Joharan said. That's what he'll do. He'll be a Zelandani.
But he's not a Zelandani, Ayla said. He lied about being called.
But some strange group of people won't know that, Danug said.
He's been around the Zelandania for so many years, he knows how to act like one.
He'll lie again, Proliva said.
Do you think he would really do that? Ayla asked, appalled at the very idea.
You should tell Zelandani you saw him leave, Ayla, Proliva said.
And the other leaders should know, Joharan said. Maybe we can bring it up before your meeting tomorrow, Jandalar. At least it will give people something else to talk about besides you.
Ayla's eyes opened wide. So soon? She said. Proliva, I am going to be there.
They were outside on the level ground in front of the sloping sides of the large natural amphitheater. Larimar was seated, and though his face was still somewhat swollen, he appeared to have essentially recovered from the beating he had received at the hands of the man facing him, except for the scars and battered nose from which he would never recover. Jandalar tried not to flinch as he stood in the bright afternoon sunlight, looking at the man whose face was so badly damaged. He would not have been recognized by people who knew him well, if they hadn't known who he was. Originally, there had been some talk that Larimar might lose an eye, and Jandalar was grateful that he had not. It was ostensibly a meeting of the Ninth Cave and the Fifth Cave, with the Zelandania as mediators, but since any interested parties were free to attend, nearly everyone who had come to the summer meeting was curious and had indicated interest. Though the Ninth Cave would have preferred to have waited until later for this confrontation, after the summer gathering of Zelandanyi was over, the Fifth Cave had insisted. Since they were being asked to accept Larimar, they wanted to know what they and Larimar could expect as compensation from Jandalar and the Ninth Cave. Jandalar and Larimar had met for the first time since the incident, just before the public meeting inside the Zelandania Lodge, along with Joharan, Camorden, the leader of the Fifth Cave, each cave's Zelandani, and several other leaders and Zelandania. They knew Marthona was not strong, and she was told that she did not need to be at the meeting, especially since Larimar's mother was no longer alive. But she would have none of it. Jandalar was her son, and she was going to be there. The mates of both of them were not a part of the first meeting either, since they both presented complications. Ayla, because she had played such a large role in the incident, and Larimar's mate, because she did not want to move to the Fifth Cave with him, another aspect that would have to be dealt with. Jandalar was quick to say how sorry he was and how much he regretted his actions, but Larimar had nothing but disdain for the tall, handsome brother of the leader of the Ninth Cave. For one of the first times in his life, Larimar had the high ground. He was in the right. He had done nothing wrong, and he wasn't going to give up any of his advantage. There was a slight buzz of conversation among the audience when the participants walked out of the lodge as news that Ayla had seen Madraman leaving the campsite wearing clothing he had very likely stolen from Larimar was passed around. It was followed by an undercurrent of comment, speculating about the various ramifications. Jondalar's and the First's past history with Madrimen, his rejection from the Zelandania and Ayla's role in it, and why she was the only one who saw him leave. People settled in to watch the events, full of anticipation. It wasn't often that they were presented with the opportunity to observe so much high drama. The whole summer was proving to be an exciting one that would fill many long, slow winter days with meat for discussion and stories for seasoning. "We have some serious matters to resolve today," the First started. "These are not matters of the spirit world, but problems between her children, and we ask that Donnie observe our deliberations and help us to speak the truth, to think clearly, and to reach fair decisions." She took out a small carved sculpture and held it up. It was the figure of a full-bodied woman with the legs tapering to barely suggested feet. Though they could not distinctly see the object she held in her hand, they all knew that it was a Danyi, a place for the all-encompassing spirit of the Great Earth Mother, or at least some essential part of her nature, to reside. A tall cairn of stones, almost a pillar, with a large base of fairly big stones tapering up to a flattened top of sandy gravel, had been constructed in the center of the level area. With a decided flourish, the First among those who served the mother planted the feet of the Danyi into the gravel and propped her up for all to see. The primary purpose of the Danyi in this context was to prevent deliberate lying, and she was a strong deterrent. When the mother's spirit was expressly invoked to watch, everyone knew any lies would be seen by her and brought to light. While someone might lie and get away with it for the moment, eventually the truth would come out, and usually with far worse repercussions. Not that there was not any great danger of anyone lying today. It could still be a limiting influence on any tendency to exaggerate. "Shall we begin?" the First said. "There were many witnesses, so I don't think we need to go into any great detail about the circumstances. During the recent festival to honor the mother, Jondalar found his mate Ayla sharing the mother's gift of pleasures with Larimar. Both Ayla and Larimar joined together of their own desire. There was no force, no compulsion. Is that correct, Ayla?" She hadn't expected to be questioned so quickly, to have all the attention of the people suddenly brought to bear on her. It caught her by surprise, but she wouldn't have known how to lie about it if she had wanted to.
"Yes, Zelandani, that is true."
"Is that true, Larimar?"
"Yeah, she was more than willing. She came after me," he said.
The First fought a slight urge to caution him about exaggeration, but continued on. "And then what happened?"
She was deciding whether to ask Ayla or Jondalar, but Larimar jumped in. "You can see what happened. The next thing I know, Jondalar was punching me in the face," he said.
"Jondalar?"
The tall man bowed his head and swallowed.
"That's what happened. I saw him with Ayla, and I dragged him off her and started hitting him. I know it was wrong. I have no excuse," Jondalar said, knowing in his heart, even as he said it, that he would do it again.
"Do you know why you hit him, Jondalar?" the First asked.
"I was jealous," he mumbled.
"You were jealous? Is that what you said?"
"Yes, Zelandani."
"If you had to express your jealousy, Jondalar, couldn't you have just pulled them apart? Did you have to hit him?"
"I couldn't stop myself, and once I started..."
Jondalar shook his head. "Once he started, no one could stop him. He even hit me," the leader of the Fifth said. "He was beside himself, in some kind of a frenzy.
I don't know what we would have done if that big Mamutoi hadn't got hold of him.
That's why he's so ready to take in Larimar,
Falara whispered to Proliva, but was easily heard by those around her.
He's mad that he couldn't stop Jondi and got hit when he tried.
He also likes Larimar's Barma, but he may discover that Larimar is no shiny piece of amber, Proliva said.
He is not exactly the first one I would ask to join my cave.
She turned her attention back to the center.
This is the reason, Zelandani was saying, that we try to teach the senselessness of jealousy. It can get out of hand. Do you understand that, Jondalar?
Yes, I do. It was stupid of me, and I'm very sorry. I'll do whatever you say to make up for it. I want to make amends.
He can't make up for it, Larimar said. He can't fix my face, just like he couldn't put the teeth back in Madraman's mouth.
The first gave Larimar a look of annoyance. That was uncalled for, she thought. It wasn't necessary to bring that up. He doesn't have the least idea how much Jondalar was provoked in that situation, but she kept her thoughts to herself.
But reparations were paid, Marthona said loudly.
And I expect them to be paid again, Larimar retorted.
What do you expect? The first asked. What redress are you asking? What do you want, Larimar?
What I want is to punch his pretty face in, Larimar said.
There was a gasp from the audience.
That is no doubt true, but it is not a remedy allowed by the mother. Do you have any other thoughts about how you would like him to make amends?
The Danyar asked.
Larimar's mate stood up.
He keeps making bigger dwellings for himself. Why don't you ask him to make a big new dwelling for your family, Larimar? She called out.
That might be a possibility, Tremida, the first said. But where would you want it made? At the 9th cave or the 5th cave, Larimar?
That's no compensation for me, Larimar said. What do I care what kind of dwelling she lives in? She'll just turn it into a filthy mess anyway.
You don't care about where your children live, Larimar? The first asked.
My children? They're not mine, not if what you say is true. If coupling is the way they start, I didn't start any of them. Except maybe the first. I haven't coupled, much less had any pleasures with her, in years. Believe me, she's no pleasure. I don't know where those children came from. Maybe mother festivals. Give a man enough to drink and even she might look good. But whoever started them, it wasn't me. The only thing that woman is good for is drinking my barma, Larimar sneered.
That is certainly true. Lenoga has taken care of her siblings more than her mother, and now Lanadar is helping. But they are too young to take on so much responsibility, Proliva said from the audience.
Larimar, they are still the children of your hearth. It is your responsibility to provide for them, the one who was first said. You cannot just decide you don't want them.
Why not? I don't want them. They never meant anything to me. She doesn't even care about them. Why should I?
The leader of the 5th cave was looking just as horrified as everyone else at Larimar's callous denunciation of the children of his hearth. And in the audience, Proliva whispered,
I told you he was no shiny piece of amber.
Then who do you expect to take care of the children of your hearth, Larimar? Zelandani said.
The man stopped and frowned. For all I care, Jondalar can. There's nothing he can give me that I want. He can't give me back my face, and I can't have the satisfaction of giving him what he gave me. He's so eager to take care of things, to make amends. Let him take care of that lazy, loud-mouthed, manipulating shrew and her brood, Larimar said.
He may owe you a lot, Larimar. But that's too much to ask of a man who has a family of his own to take on the responsibility of a family the size of yours, Joharan said.
Never mind, Joharan. I'll do it, Jandalar said. If that's what he wants, I'll do it. If he isn't going to take responsibility for his own hearth, someone has to. Those children need someone to care about them.
Don't you think you should talk to Ayla about it first? Proliva said from the audience. That much responsibility will take away from her own family.
Not that they don't already take more care of that family than either Larimar or Tremita, the woman thought, but didn't say aloud.
No, Proliva, he's right, Ayla said. I'm responsible, too, for what Jandalar did to Larimar. I didn't realize what it would come to, but I'm just as much at fault. If taking on the responsibility for his family will satisfy Larimar, then we should do it.
Well, Larimar, is that what you want? The first said.
Yeah, if it will keep the rest of you off me. Why not? Larimar said. Then he laughed. You're welcome to her, Jandalar.
What about you, Tremita? Is that satisfactory to you?
Zelandani said. Will he build me a new dwelling, like the one he's making for her? She asked, pointing at Ayla.
Yes, I will make sure you have a new dwelling, Jandalar said. Do you want it made at the 9th cave or the 5th?
Well, if I'm going to be your second woman, Jandalar, she said, trying to be coy, I might as well stay at the 9th. That's my home, anyway.
Hear me, Tremita, Jandalar said, looking directly at her. I am not taking you as a second woman. I said I would assume the responsibility to provide for you and your children. I said I would build you a dwelling. That is the full extent of my obligation to you. I am doing this as reparation for the injury I did to your mate. In no way are you anything close to a second woman to me, Tremita. Is that understood?
Larimar laughed. Don't say I didn't warn you, Jandalar. I told you she was a manipulating shrew. She'll use you any way she can. He laughed again. You know, maybe this isn't going to be so bad. It just might give me some satisfaction to see you have to put up with her.
Are you sure you want to go swimming there, Ayla? Jandalar asked.
It was our place before you took Morona there, and it's still the best place to swim, especially now when the river is so stirred up and muddy downstream. I haven't had the chance for a good swim since I arrived, and we'll be leaving soon, Ayla said.
But are you sure you're strong enough to swim?
Yes, I am sure. But don't worry. I plan to spend most of the time laying on the bank in the sun. All I want is to get out of this lodge and spend some time with you, away from people for a while, now that I finally got Zelandani to agree that I'm well enough. Ayla said. I was getting ready to get on Winnie and go someplace anyway before too long. I know she's concerned, but I'm fine. I just need to get out and move around.
Zelandani had blamed herself for not paying close enough attention to Ayla and was being, rather uncharacteristically, overprotective. She felt more than a little responsible for the fact that they had almost lost the young woman, and she wasn't going to let that happen again. Jandalar was in full agreement, and for a while Ayla enjoyed their unaccustomed close attention, but as she gained her strength back, she began to find such doting concern vexing. Ayla had been trying to convince the Danyer that she was completely rested and strong enough to ride and swim again, but it wasn't until the first wanted wolf out of the way for a while that she finally agreed. John Ayla and the youngsters her age were again involved with the Zelandania in preparations for a small part they would play in the farewell ceremonies that were being planned to close the summer meeting. Wolf was not only a distraction when all the children were together, making it hard for them to concentrate, but it was difficult for John Ayla to both control him and learn what she was supposed to do.
When Zelandani had intimated to Ayla that, while the wolf was certainly welcome, perhaps she could keep the animal with her, it had been the edge Ayla needed to persuade the Danyer that she ought to take Wolf and the horses away from the campsite for some exercise. Ayla was anxious to leave as early as possible the next morning, before Zelandani changed her mind. Jandalar had watered and brushed the horses before the morning meal, and when he tied riding blankets on Winnie and Racer and fitted halters on Racer and Gray, they knew they were going out and pranced with anticipation. Though they didn't plan to ride her, Ayla didn't want to leave the young mare alone. She was sure Gray would be lonely if she was left behind. Horses liked companionship, especially of their own kind, and Gray needed the exercise, too. The wolf looked up with expectation when Jandalar picked up a pair of pack baskets made to hang across the back of a horse. The carriers were full of various implements and mysterious packages wrapped in pieces of the pale brown material woven from flax fibers that Ayla had made as training samplers to pass the time while she was recovering. Marthona had arranged to have a small loom made and was teaching her to weave. One of the baskets was covered by a leather hide to spread out on the ground, and the other by the soft, yellowish, toweling skins that had been gifts of the Sharamudoi. Wolf bounded on ahead when the man signaled that he could go with them as they left the lodge. Near the horse enclosure, Ayla stopped to pick a few ripe berries hanging from red-stemmed bushes. She brushed the round, powdery blue fruit against her tunic, noticed the deeper blue skin, then popped it in her mouth, and, smiling with satisfaction, savored the sweet, juicy taste. As she climbed up on a stump to mount Winnie, she felt good just being outside, knowing she didn't have to go back in the lodge right away. She was sure she knew every crack that cut through every painted or carved design on the sturdy wooden poles that supported the roof thatch, every smudge of soot that blackened the edges of the smoke hole. She wanted to look at sky and trees and a landscape uncluttered with lodges. As they started out, Racer was unusually boisterous and a bit fractious, and communicated some of his unruliness to the two mares, making them harder to handle. Once they got beyond the wooded area, Ayla slipped the halter off Gray so she could go at her own pace, and by tacit agreement, Ayla and Jandalar urged their mounts to a gallop and let them go at full speed. By the time the animals eased off of their own accord, they had worked off their excess energy and were more relaxed, but not Ayla. She was exhilarated. She had always loved riding fast, and after being kept close to camp, it was especially exciting. They rode along at a more leisurely pace across a landscape contoured by the deep relief of high hills, limestone cliffs, and river-cut valleys. Though the noon sun was still hot most days, the season was turning. Mornings were often cool and crisp, and evenings overcast or rainy. Leaves were transforming their lush green of full summer into the yellows and occasional reds of autumn. The grasses of the open plains shaded from deep gold and rich brown to the pale yellow and grayish dun of the natural hay that would stand in the fields throughout most of the winter. But the leaves of certain forbs had turned to shades of red. Single plants or small clumps of the herbs suddenly appearing along their way stood out as bright spots of color that delighted Ayla. But it was the occasional south-facing wooded hillside that made her catch her breath with its dazzling display. From a distance, the colorful brush and trees gave an impression of large bouquets of bright flowers. Gray was content to follow along riderless, stopping now and then to graze, and Wolf poked his nose into hillocks, pockets of brush, and patches of tall grass as he traced his own path of invisible scents and secret sounds. Their route traced a broad circle that eventually took them back towards the meeting campsite from the upstream direction of the river. But they didn't return to camp. They cut in alongside the smaller waterway that wound through the woods to the north of the Ninth Cave's camp, and near the time the sun reached its zenith, they found their way to the deep swimming hole at a sharp bend in the smaller stream. The trees provided dappled shade for the secluded beach of sandy gravel. The sun felt pleasantly warm as Ayla lifted her leg over and slid down from Winnie. She unfastened the pack baskets and untied the riding blanket, and while Jandalar spread out the large hide, she pulled out a leather drawstring bag and hand-fed the dun-yellow mare some mixed grains, mostly oats, then gave her some affectionate strokes and scratches. After a few more handfuls, she did the same for Gray, who had been nudging her for attention. Jandalar fed and fondled Racer. The stallion was still more unmanageable than usual, though he calmed down with the food and handling. But Jandalar didn't want to go after him if he decided to wander off. With a long rope attached to his halter, he hitched the horse to a small tree. Jandalar suddenly recalled that he had been considering letting the stallion go to find a place for himself with other horses on the open plains, and wondered if he should. But the man wasn't ready yet to give up the company of the magnificent animal. Wolf, who had been chasing his own whims, suddenly appeared from behind a screen of brush. Ayla had brought a meaty bone for him, but before she pulled it out of the pack basket, she decided to give him some attention, too. She tapped her shoulder and braced herself to receive the weight of the huge wolf as he jumped up on his hind legs and supported himself with his paws in front of her shoulders. He licked her neck, then gently held her jaw in his teeth. She returned the gesture in kind, then signaled him down and hunkered in front of him, taking his head between her hands. She rubbed and scratched behind his ears and roughed up the thickening fur around his neck, then sat down on the ground and just hugged him. She knew the wolf had been there for her too, as much as Jandalar, when she was recovering from her perilous journey to the world of the spirits. As often as he'd seen it, the tall man still marveled at her way with the wolf, and as comfortable as he was with the animal himself, he still reminded himself occasionally that wolf was a hunting animal, a killing animal. Others of his kind stalked, killed, and ate animals larger than themselves. Wolf could as easily tear Ayla's throat out as caress it gently with his teeth, yet he trusted this animal completely with his woman and his child. He had seen the love Wolf felt for them both, and though he couldn't fathom how it was possible, at a basic level, he understood it. He firmly believed that the wolf's feeling for him was very much like his feeling for the wolf. The animal trusted him with the woman and child he loved, but Jandalar had no doubt that if Wolf ever thought that the man would cause harm to either one of them, he wouldn't hesitate to stop him any way he could, even if it meant killing him. He would do the same. Jandalar enjoyed watching Ayla with the wolf, but then he loved watching her no matter what she was doing, especially now that she was nearly her old self and they were back together. He'd hated leaving her behind when he left with the Ninth Cave for the summer meeting and had missed her terribly. In spite of his diversion with Morona, after feeling sure he had lost her, first because of his own actions and then, more desperately, because of the juice from the roots she had taken, he could hardly believe they were together again. He had so thoroughly persuaded himself that she was forever gone from him that he had to keep looking at her, smiling at her, watching her smile back, to believe that she was still his mate, his woman, that they were riding the horses, going for a swim, being together, just as though nothing had happened. It made him think of their long journey together, their adventures, and the people they had met along the way. There were the Mamutoi, the mammoth hunters who had adopted Ayla, the Sharamudoi, among whom his brother Thonalan had found a mate, though her death had killed his spirit. Tholi and Marquino, as well as the others, had wanted Ayla and him to stay, especially after she had used her medicine skills to straighten Rosario's broken arm, which had been healing badly. They had even met Juran, a hunter from the Hadumai, the people he and Thonalan had visited, and of course the Sarmunai, whose hunters, the wolf women, had captured him, and Ataroa, their headwoman, who had tried to kill Ayla until Wolf stopped her the only way he could, by killing her. And the Losadunai. He suddenly remembered when they had stopped to visit the Losadunai on their long journey from the land of the mammoth hunters. They lived on the other side of the glaciered highland to the east, where the Great Mother River began, and their language had enough similarities to Zelindanyi that he could understand most of it, although Ayla, with her gift for languages, had quickly learned it even better. The Losadunai were among the best known of the Zelindanyi neighbors, and travelers from both often visited with each other, although crossing the glacier could be an obstacle. There had been a mother festival while they were visiting, and just before it started, Jondalar and Losaduna had conducted a private ceremony. Jondalar had asked the Great Mother for a child born to Ayla, to be born to his hearth, one born of his spirit, or his essence, as Ayla always said it. He had also made a special request. He had asked that if Ayla ever became pregnant with a child of his spirit, he wanted to know for sure that it was from him. Jondalar had often been told that he was favored by the mother, so favored that no woman could refuse him, not even Dani herself. He fully believed that when Ayla was lost in the void after using the dangerous roots again, the Great Mother had granted his impassioned entreaty. She had given him what he wished for, longed for, what he had asked for, and in his mind he fervently thanked her again. But suddenly he understood that the mother had also granted the request he had made in the special ceremony with the Losaduna. He knew that John Ayla was his child, the child of his essence, and he was happy for that. He knew that all the children born to Ayla would be of his spirit, his essence, because of who she was, because she loved only him, and it pleased him to know that. And he knew he would love only her, no matter what. But this new gift of knowledge, he knew it would change things, and couldn't help but wonder how much. He wasn't the only one. Everyone was thinking about it, but one in particular. The woman who was the first among those who served the Great Earth Mother was sitting quietly in the Zelindania Lodge, thinking about the new gift of knowledge, and knew it would change the world. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Land of Painted Caves by Jean M. Owl. Copyright 2011 by Jean M. Owl. Performed by Sandra Burr. Directed by Colleen Willits. Engineered by Melissa Coates. Performance copyright 2010 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, Post Office Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.